Well, we all know that the continued discussion and dialogue between China and the U.S. is going to have a big pressuring market factor as we move forward. Good afternoon. You're listening to the American Ag Network. I'm Susan Littlefield. Mike Zuzulo joins us today with Global Commodity Analytics, and I think that's where we need to start, Mike. I know that China versus U.S. throughout today's trading session has had little tidbits coming out here and there that the market's been reacting to.
Yeah, it really has, Susan. And I think it's probably magnified quite a bit because we are seeing less and less data from the government, even though we did get weekly export inspections a day late because of the Columbus Day holiday on Tuesday. But I think you hit it on the nose is that, you know, Tuesday, much of Tuesday's price action, whether you're talking about the overnight Globex trade when wheat made a new five-year low, or you're talking about the day trade when the U.S. dollar made four to five new lows throughout the day as key people in the Trump administration were doing interviews, Secretary of Treasury, the USTR trade representative was on CNBC midday. I was listening to him. And then the Fed Chairman Powell was speaking also and talking about another rate cut potentially this month. These outside market forces, these macro markets, as I call them, really came in and worked deeply in the commodity markets, and it gave us a good peek into how they work because, as I said, in the overnight markets, the crude oil market was at a five-month low. The wheat market was at a five-year low. The relationship between WTI crude and the SRW wheat is about 90% positive right now on a four-week basis for lead month futures. And while those two markets were breaking hard, the U.S. dollar was firming substantially to a new two-month high. That was almost completely reversed during the day on Tuesday because of some of the commentary and the renewal of U.S.-China trade uncertainty turning to U.S.-China trade fears. And so the dollar started to go back down again, as it has all of 2025 because of the trade issues. And that then created the domino effect of WTI coming back up, wheat coming back up, and then that allowing the corn to come back up. And the only, quote, loser on the day was the soy complex, pressured by the bean oil, also pressured, I think, by these trade tensions increasing again. And I think most importantly, for the medium term and for those who are holding beans right now, the Brazilian currency weakened substantially against the dollar. In fact, it made a new two-month low against the dollar. And that's something very important, another one of those supportive features to this market throughout 2025, has not just been the weaker dollar, but it's also been a stronger Brazilian currency. I'm starting to see that break apart, unfortunately. The Brazilian currency is starting to give way. I'm wondering if it's not because of some of the debt issues that they have and some of the debt issues that their next-door neighbor, Argentina, has as well. So that could put pressure on the soy seemingly from nowhere, just that relationship right there, unfortunately, in my view.
Do you see, and CONAB came out with some of those numbers and reissuing of numbers and looking at for soybean production, for example, just not a big change from September, but still talking difference corn-wise compared to what the USDA was saying when we had that last set of numbers come out.
Yeah, and this is the problem with the corn and wheat numbers, both globally corn and globally wheat, is one of the key elements. I talked about the wheat and the crude oil being so closely aligned in price relationship. Why is that? Well, it's because many in the market see a pretty tremendous oversupply of both wheat and crude oil in 2026. And I'm just not there yet in my numbers to answer your question, Susan. I'm not there when it comes to how tight we were on old crop U.S. corn supplies. I talked to a Central Illinois client today, and even though he did have record corn yields, he said his beans were much better than what he was expecting compared to his corn. I am hearing a lot in Nebraska all the way over to Ohio that beans are really outperforming expectations while the corn is so-so or doing okay compared to expectations. And so then that takes you to the South American crop. Do we really have the size of the South American corn crop that the USDA is pushing? I'm not seeing it based upon some of the weather situation, soil moisture profiles that they had in center west Brazil late in their growing year. And the same would be said for me when it comes to Ukraine and Russia. I'm just not seeing how they can have such a declining sunseed oil and vegetable oil production number while they're in the same time increasing wheat and corn production numbers. I know they're grown in different parts, but they both had some pretty significant drought areas in both grains and oil seeds this past year. So I still think there's a lot of unanswered questions on global supply demand.
Well, let's talk about an exciting area right now, and it's been this cattle market. We saw a lot of red that started out the trading session. Didn't last long as we got to the noon hour. The feeders once again stepping in to be the leader.
Yeah, and they came with the help of the cattle market, something very necessary, something we saw kind of break down at the end of last week, and then open the feeders up to the downside because the fats weren't following. But fats came around this week and really started to lead the market higher, seeing new monthly highs and then being able to take out the September highs on Tuesday. That really, I think, helped ignite the feeder cattle market, as did, I think, the turnaround on Wall Street and also what we're seeing out there in the sale barns and on the auction blocks. Oklahoma City, you know, seeing $5 to $15 higher steer prices, $10 to $25 higher calf prices. This is still, I think, funneling through into the feeder and fat market. I also had seen mid-session, Susan, a news wire suggesting, this was coming out of Latin America, suggesting that Mexican cattle ranchers wanted to curtail beef imports coming from Brazil into Mexico. I'm not so sure that didn't help feed the psychological bull as far as available supplies in North America in general. Having said all that, I did go ahead and turn on the hedge spigot on with clients and subscribers on Tuesday and recommended starting to get hedges in place because, number one, my price objectives have been met. Number two, the October seasonal, I get a little bit more nervous about just from a cyclical standpoint and also from a box beef standpoint. And I think we have enough numbers out there in the short term to be able to meet demand. And I think lastly would be Wall Street is something that I think is starting to give a little bit more of a red flag to as far as maybe not wanting to go much higher at this stage. And I think funds have really been buyers in the feeders and fats with the idea that the beef consumption is partially due to the strong Wall Street performance. So I'm doing near-term marketings, not going past first quarter, but felt good about getting the hedges in place until we were up $6 in feeders, and I wondered whether I was doing the right thing.
Wonderful. Well, thanks so much, Mike. I appreciate all your thoughts and comments on the crazy markets we've had today. Quick reminder to everybody, commodity futures and options do involve a substantial risk of loss, not suitable to all investors. That is the Tuesday Market Wrap-Up. Joining me, Mike Zuzulo with Global Commodity Analytics. You're listening to the American Ag Network.